Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Factory Girls from Village to City in a Changing China is a work of narrative nonfiction by Leslie T. Chang that examines China's economic transformation through the lives of young migrant women in the industrial city of Dongguan. Rather than presenting a broad macroeconomic history, the book focuses on everyday experience, factory work, job hopping, dormitory life, language study, courtship, family expectations, and the difficult transition from rural villages to urban manufacturing centers. Chang, a former Wall Street Journal correspondent, uses close observation and personal reporting to show how migration reshaped both individual identity and the country's labor system. The book is also partly about method, because Chang places the reader inside her reporting process and the relationships she builds with her subjects. Its purpose is to explain how China's export economy depends on a vast, mobile workforce, and how that workforce, especially young women, experiences opportunity, constraint, and social mobility at the same time. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, how migrant labor became the engine of China's manufacturing boom. A central argument of the book is that China's industrial rise cannot be understood without the huge flow of migrant labor from countryside to city. Chang shows how factories in the Pearl River Delta depend on a constantly replenished supply of young workers who leave agriculture for wage labor. This workforce is not just a background condition, but the main mechanism behind China's extraordinary production capacity. By focusing on the labor pipeline itself, the book explains why factories can expand quickly, wages stay relatively low, and employers can keep replacing workers who leave. The result is a portrait of industrial growth built on mobility, endurance, and turnover rather than on stable careers. Chang also makes clear that migration is not simply economic relocation. It changes social expectations, weakens older village patterns, and creates new forms of ambition. In that sense, the book links industrial capitalism to a wider reorganization of Chinese society. Secondly, the lives of young women as a lens on social change. Chang's decision to follow young female workers is crucial to the book's meaning. These women are not treated as symbols alone. They are shown as practical, observant, and highly adaptive individuals making constrained choices in a changing environment. Their stories reveal how gender roles shift when daughters leave home to earn wages, often gaining more autonomy than they would in village life. At the same time, the book does not romanticize empowerment. The women face long hours, uncertain job security, cramped housing, and pressure to remain useful, attractive, and employable. Their migration can raise family status, but it also exposes them to isolation and exploitation. By centering women rather than abstract labor statistics, Chang shows how broader economic change is lived through decisions about money, independence, education, and marriage. The female perspective also challenges common assumptions that modernization moves in one direction. The book suggests that industrialization can expand options while still reproducing hierarchy and vulnerability. Thirdly, factory, dormitory, and city as connected social worlds. The book pays close attention to the spaces that structure migrant life, and this spatial focus gives the reporting much of its force. Factories are shown as complex institutions with their own internal services and rules, while dormitories, streets, karaoke bars, language classes, and village homes form a wider ecosystem around the workplace. Chang uses these settings to show that a migrant worker's life is not divided neatly into work and private life. Employment shapes friendships, romance, consumption, aspiration, and self-presentation. The city offers both opportunity and disorientation, because young migrants must learn to navigate institutions, accents, and social codes that differ sharply from those of their home villages. Village visits during Chinese New Year further underline the distance between origins and destination, revealing the emotional cost of mobility. This layered geography is important because it shows that Chinese modernization is not only an economic process, but also a cultural and spatial one, in which people move through several overlapping worlds at once. Fourthly, a reporting method built on intimacy, patience, and observation. Factory Girls stands out because of the way Chang gathers and presents her material. She does not rely only on interviews or statistics. Instead, she spends years building trust with her subjects and recording the textures of their lives. This ethnographic style allows her to capture contradictions that would be missed in a conventional policy or economics book. The reader sees not just what migrant workers do, but how they describe themselves, revise their plans, and interpret their own opportunities. Chang also includes her family history and her own position as a Chinese-American journalist, which adds a reflective layer to the narrative. Her approach raises questions about access, interpretation, and representation, especially when writing across class and cultural difference. At the same time, this method is what makes the book persuasive. It connects large-scale social change to carefully observed human detail. The book is therefore as much about how to understand China as it is about China itself. Lastly, The book's limits and its value as a human-scale portrait of China. One reason Factory Girls remains widely discussed is that it chooses depth over total coverage. Some readers may want broader statistical analysis, a larger sample of workers, or a more systematic account of China's economy. Chang instead offers a focused portrait of a small number of lives, which means the book cannot stand in for the full diversity of migrant experience. Yet this limitation is also its strength. By narrowing the frame, it makes the scale of change emotionally and intellectually legible. The book helps readers understand how abstract forces such as globalization, labor migration, and urbanization are translated into everyday choices. It also avoids the flattening effect that can come from treating Chinese workers as a mass without individuality. Compared with many books on China that emphasize policy, geopolitics, or industrial statistics, Factory Girls is distinguished by its combination of close observation, cultural sensitivity, and narrative clarity. It is valuable precisely because it turns a vast transformation into a readable, grounded social history. In conclusion, Factory Girls is best suited to readers interested in modern China, labor migration, gender, globalization, and nonfiction reportage. It will especially appeal to readers who want to understand economic transformation through lived experience rather than through charts and official narratives. The book offers practical insight into how industrial growth depends on mobility, how village and city are connected through family and work, and how young women navigate opportunity within unequal systems. It also provides intellectual value for anyone studying social change, because it shows how large-scale development alters identity, aspiration, and everyday behavior. What sets it apart from many books in its category is its human scale and its reporting style. Chang does not write a detached policy analysis or a broad survey of China's rise. Instead, she combines deep field reporting with narrative sensitivity, making the structural forces behind globalization visible through individual lives. That balance of empathy, detail, and analytical purpose is what gives the book its lasting significance. If you would like to support Leslie T. Chang, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.